You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Here we are at episode 7 of Fly on the Call, candid conversations on music. This week, instead of encouraging you to hit up a Bandcamp should this conversation intrigue you, I'd instead urge you to check out a live video. There are some terrific videos to be found on YouTube that capture the energy of Perennial's live performance, and I will put a link in the show notes to my personal favorite, an Austin Pudding Live at Labyrinth audio session from earlier this year. That brings us to our guest, Connecticut/Western Mass's Perennial. You could try to find them as art punk, post-hardcore, or a variety of other underground genres, but to truly understand what they are, you need to listen. The band has a strong sense of themselves musically, ethically, and aesthetically. It all combines to create the intriguing mystery that is Perennial. The band is releasing an EP this year to hold fans over while working hard on finishing up their second LP. But once you're indoctrinated, even that will feel too far away. Enjoy. When I saw you open for Slingshot Dakota was the first time that I'd ever heard you. And like since then, like learning more about you, it really strikes me as kind of like the perfect fit, the way you guys both have kind of like that positivity and like the thankfulness and like encouraging other people within the music industry and stuff. So I think that was like a really cool way to discover you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we love playing with them. Slingshot is a fantastic band full of wonderful people. So we're always happy when we get to see them and especially happy when we get to play with them.
For sure. And I was like, definitely like immediately drawn in by the sound. It definitely like it invoked like a similar feeling to like Refused or Melt Banana, maybe even like a little bit of like Page 99. can you talk a little bit about like the influences in that way?
Sure.
Yeah, I think in the case of Refused, that's definitely a foundational influence for us, definitely a band that we really love and learned a lot from on a number of levels. Page 99 is certainly an influence as well, especially on the newer stuff, going for sort of the real dynamic sound that they have. Was definitely something that informed some of the newer stuff they're writing. So yeah, those are both definitely bands that that have meant a lot to us, and I think are a big part of why Perennial sounds the way it does and performs the way it does.
Yeah, and I saw in like a couple interviews you were talking about kind of how when you were starting the band and kind of coming up with the sound and everything, you were looking at both at bands that you admired like sonically and ones that you admired ethically. How did that kind of influence Perennial?
Yeah, I think both of those are really important aspects to us. Specifically like Fugazi, for instance, we really admired their ethics around all ages shows and ethics around DIY. And we thought that we should continue that work. And so we try to only play all ages shows, and it's become something that we're a little bit known for and something that's really important to us, and allows us to make art in a way that feels really genuine and safe for us.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess like the tagline for Perennial is like the new sound of the avant-garde. Can you tell me a little about like what that kind of like means to you?
Sure. To a certain extent, it's sort of tongue-in-cheek. We thought it would be kind of fun to give ourselves a tagline like that. We were just thinking about things that, you know, in the long history of rock and roll and rhythm and blues and pop music, stuff that we don't see anymore. Mm-hmm. And so one of those things is you used to see, even on the back of records, you know, in the 60s, record labels would put like taglines for different bands or, you know, so like a garage rock band like The Remains, who are from Boston, it would, you know, there would be like a tagline on the record label that would be like, or on the back of the record, that would be like, the new sound coming out of the Northeast or something, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. And I just thought, you know, there's all this stuff that sort of, that I suppose just makes it more interesting, adds a bit of intrigue, adds a bit of mystery to a band. I always like bands that instantly made me want to learn more about them and how they saw the world. So choosing just like a little catchphrase like that, I think was part of that impulse of sort of missing that kind of, that instinct to put on a show that I think is, not as common nowadays as it was, say, you know, during that 60s renaissance.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense the way that's kind of gone away, because, you know, with like social media and everything, kind of a lot of artists just kind of put everything out there. But like, it was interesting the way that like, worked its way into the way I discovered you, like, because like I said, I had not listened to you prior to seeing you live. And then I think going on Bandcamp was like the first thing that I saw, and it was right there, like the new sound of the avant-garde. And I was like, okay, that's like, it definitely like connected with me.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a fun way to be introduced to us, is seeing us live. I think that, you know, finding us on Bandcamp is great, but seeing us live really gives you a whole picture.
Yeah, and I mean, I know you kind of started the band with the idea of having like the most energetic live shows possible with like as little downtime as you could. Is that something that you feel like is a constraint with the recorded music, or how does it like play into that process?
I don't think so. To a certain extent, we treat the record as the record and the live show as the live show. So there's stuff that we do on the album, because both with Symmetry of Autumn Leaves and on the full length we're finishing up now, we really like to treat the studio as an instrument. We like to pile on different effects and samples and everything to make it this really three-dimensional headphone experience. And then the live show can just be a streamlined, whittled down version of that, so that we can be playing the same songs on the record. They might be these much bigger, more sonically rich experiences, whereas live, they're just these really immediate, sharpened things. And we just treat one as one and the other as the other, so that they work in their context, right? When you're listening to it now, I'm on headphones, you want something that's going to light up every part of your brain, whereas I think live music needs to be exciting and it needs to be vital. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you might as well just listen to the recording.
For sure, yeah. And I mean, kind of like going off of that, like three of the four songs on the debut EP have kind of made their way in different versions into other releases. So can you talk a little bit about like the evolution of that and how it... how like the music continues to change even once it's kind of officially recorded and released?
Yeah, I think it's sometimes it's just that we have a version. So for instance, you know, Massachusetts Scenic Byways is one of the first songs we put out. And then once Chelsea started singing more, we decided to do another version where she would be more present vocally. And then sometimes I'm drawn to this idea that if you're really into a band, you can start to really do some archaeology and find all these different versions of songs. So for instance, you know, the Beatles have the version of Your Mother Should Know or Strawberry Fields Forever that you can find on the proper albums, but then you can go digging and find the version that's weirder or heavier or more minimalist. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can sort of see all the different ways that a song can be recorded, right? That there's the bones and the skeleton of a song, but what you put on top of it, there are a million options. I think we just enjoyed that process of trying out new versions of the same framework.
Yeah, and in the beginning, we had recorded a lot of our stuff before we really were playing a lot of shows. And so, you know, as we began playing, we were like, oh, actually, I like this better than how we have it recorded. And then we would, that's sort of why we have a couple versions of some of our songs. Mm-hmm. Because recording it, or even during the process of recording, we, you know, we would have one draft and then we would be playing it live for a couple months and we would change some things. And so that's sort of a fun process. It's sort of, yeah, like the history of our songs.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like going back to you mentioning like the Beatles, like I'm definitely like, I get into like little periods where I'm like super into like digging into like everything about them and stuff. And actually the first time that I heard like the single version of Revolution, like the really distorted heavy guitars and stuff, was I'd picked up like just one of their like compilation records out of Goodwill or something. And I put it on and I was like, wait, I know this song, but not like this. And it was like, it was such a really cool experience. And I, like that version of the song is probably like my favorite Beatles song.
That's interesting. So were you were you initially familiar with the White Album version with like the acoustic guitars and...
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, they're a good example of that, where they'll, you know, they're not afraid to record a song a bunch of times. And I just, yeah, you know, I figured, why not? I sort of presumed if we found it interesting, hopefully other folks would as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't think it could hurt in any way either, so right. Definitely. And I mean, going back to kind of like the idea of the live show, I mean, you guys are really like kind of tour horses. You play like a lot, and with like such a unique sound, you kind of play with a bunch of different bands. How does that kind of work for you? Like, have you found it to be easier or harder to find bands that like you fit in with?
It's a hard question. I think that we often end up on really diverse bills, and I think that's the most interesting show for us to play. I don't want to watch the same band four times, and so I like when we play diverse bills. And often we can either be like the least heavy band or the heaviest band on a show, and usually that seems to draw some attention. So, you know, if we're on a really like traditional hardcore show, we'll be the lightest band and people will be like, whoa, that was sick. I hadn't heard of you. Cause you know, that community of bands can be sort of, such a tight knit family that they all know each other. Mm-hmm. And so that can be a nice surprise. And then when we're the heaviest band on like a more emo or indie show, people still appreciate us, even though they might be kind of blocking their ears more. but yeah, I think it's really fun. I don't think there's a problem. Like, I don't think we have a hard time finding shows, that we fit on, because we do bring a unique, live experience. And I think that, you know, even if people don't necessarily enjoy our music, they are at least entertained.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things that I think stood out to me when I first saw you, and also stands out in like the recorded versions, is kind of like the role of repetition in the songs, but not quite in like the typical way of like choruses. Could you talk a little bit about just kind of like that structure and like the role of repetition?
Sure. So sometimes there can be a conceptual reason for it. So for instance, The Symmetry of Autumn Leaves begins and ends with two different versions of the same song, and there's sort of a pun in there about symmetry, right? That it begins and ends the same way, so the album is symmetrical. So sometimes it comes from a conceptual place. Other times I just think, you know, as atonal and wild and loud and raucous as we get, a lot of our songwriting values and instincts come from stuff like Motown, where there's a lot of emphasis on telling a good story and having each part of the song be memorable and actually contribute to the whole. So I was reading this interview with Smokey Robinson where he said, the famous singer, Motown producer, songwriter, you name it. He was talking about how the key to a good and memorable song is to have one central idea that you build around. So that the idea is always right in the foreground and becomes this really memorable thing that you can latch onto. And I really like that advice, and I think it guides a lot of, at least what I've contributed to Perennial, if it's riffs or lyrics or structures. We're all really big fans of pop music, you know, widely defined, the last 60 years of popular music. And so I think we learn a lot of our lessons from that, and repetition's a big part of that, that musical language.
For sure, yeah. And I think it adds a lot to kind of like the re-listenability of it, and also kind of like, just like, I feel like The Symmetry of Autumn Leaves kind of needs to be taken in all at once. So you do kind of create like a world within it. Was that something kind of intentional on your end?
Yeah, absolutely. We did our best to make all the songs connect. There are a lot of interludes and parts that fade into other parts so that it all feels like one cohesive experience, so that hopefully, you know, it feels like one 22-minute track as opposed to pieces that are discrete and separate from one another. We really like the idea of one listening experience. That's one thing that guides both our record and our live show, is the idea that it's just one huge burst of energy for however long we're doing it, and then, you know, just as quickly it's over.
Yeah, I like it. With our live show, you know, we only stop so very few times that sometimes people are surprised when I'm like, oh yeah, we played 8 songs in that set. Like, really? I thought that was 3 songs, you know. So I think similarly to what Chad just said, the album as like a full concept is important to us.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, another thing that kind of stood out to me is kind of like the found sounds that you use kind of throughout the albums. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I recorded a lot of those found sounds. It's something that I really like to do, is notice the sound environment I'm in and record. So I have like hundreds of voice memos on my phone, because I just record whenever I hear something interesting, from like purposely dropping things or purposely, you know, stomping through leaves, to like listening to frogs. And so I wanted to add some of that to the album. And it's something that I've been interested in my whole life. I did a lot of recording in my childhood on various different cassette tapes, and just something that I wanted to keep exploring in Perennial.
Mm-hmm. And as far as like the writing and recording process, like how do the found sounds like fit in to that process?
We've been adding them towards the end. They're not really shaping so much songs, but sort of we use them to add to the song. So, you know, they're definitely separate worlds. So, you know, we have a song, we want to fill it out a little bit. I think about the found sounds that I have, or found sounds that we want to have on there, and then we'll go out and try to get those.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like finding just like the right fit for whatever you need, whatever the situation calls for.
It would be really cool if there was a found sound that inspired a song, but that hasn't happened yet.
And I know you've kind of talked about how Chelsea, you're going to be kind of more prominent vocally on like the newer stuff. Could you talk a little bit about kind of coming into that role?
Sure. Perennial is the first band that I sang in ever, and it took a little bit of effort on my end in terms of feeling comfortable with it. But now I love to do it, so it's great. And so we're going to add more. It's nice. I like bands that have multiple voices, so it's good that we can do that as well. Yeah, but it was just sort of a process of feeling comfortable with it and experimenting with it. And yeah, it's been a lot of work and a lot of fun.
For sure. Yeah. And I'm sure like the fact that you play so many shows kind of helps you like kind of jump right into that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's strange for us to have like multiple weeks without shows.
Sure. And I know you were talking kind of like as early back as like February about being in the studio, like working on LP2. How has that process been, and how has it kind of like evolved, and what have you been like working on with it since then?
So I would say we're probably about 95% done. The structures of the songs and sort of the rhythm tracks and the organ and guitars, all of that came really quickly. And so since then, we've just been really deliberate about getting the vocals just right, getting all of the extra layers of sound, like the interesting stuff that's going to make the album rewarding, listen after listen. That's the stuff we've really been taking our time with. Because we haven't really sort of decided when the release is, it means that we have plenty of time to listen to something for a while, get the mixes just right, you know, work on a third mix, a fourth mix, so that we're ultimately happy with this album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the recording process has been really fun. And it's taken a long time, a little bit, because I was sick for a couple months every time we were trying to record. And so that kind of delayed us a little bit, but yeah, working with Chris is really wonderful. We've been having a lot of fun in the studio, feeling really comfortable. This is the first studio that I recorded vocals in, so that's really, it's been a learning process. But yeah, it's been really fun, and I think that what we have so far is really, really close and really exciting. And along the lines of Symmetry. So mm-hmm. I think people that liked Symmetry will also like this album.
Awesome. Yeah. And I mean, earlier you kind of mentioned like bands like Page 99 kind of coming in more to the new album. And I know in a couple of the interviews that I read, you kind of talked more about like the 60s and Motown stuff coming in as well. I guess just kind of like, how has the process come, and especially like blending in those multiple influences, how did that kind of work for you?
Right. Well, I think it was a big part of the opening idea as we started to deliberately. So we had a couple songs that we had already been working on that were sort of rolled into this album. But I'd say a good 2/3 of it we wrote with the premise of trying to write the heaviest, most intense music we've ever written, but to find ways of pairing it with other sounds that you don't often see in post-hardcore or garage punk. So stuff like 60s soul or post-bop and experimental jazz from the late 50s and early 60s. So things that we listen to just as often as, you know, stuff like Page 99 or These Arms Are Snakes or Blood Brothers, the stuff you would maybe more immediately associate with Perennial's sound. Mm-hmm. We wanted to look for ways to bring in all of the stuff that we're most passionate about as musicians.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like a really fun and dynamic record too. So you do get a nice flavor of different genres all in one record. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some stuff on there that I'm really excited for people to see or hear.
For sure, yeah. And so do all those kind of things come together like directly, like sonically, or is it more like kind of like the vibe from this one thing and like but mixed with the sound of another thing?
Right. So sometimes it's that we'll get ideas from music that we listen to outside of sort of traditional boundaries of what we would call punk. and that will sort of get incorporated into what the perennial sound is, I guess. But there's other times on this record where we really emphasize just how drastically we can move from something that sounds like Thelonious Monk or Eric Dolphy into something that sounds like Refused or something really, really heavy. So, you know, sometimes it's a matter of finding a balance between the two sounds where you can maybe sort of let the rhythm or the harmonic ideas of a soul song inform a punk song. Other times it's, for the first minute, it might as well be minimalist jazz, but then all of a sudden it takes this hard turn into just really bombastic, loud, heavy stuff.
For sure, yeah. And that's kind of harkens back to live shows, while kind of like keeping the listener on their feet and kind of keeping them engaged in that way too.
Yeah, exactly.
So I feel like kind of the aesthetic of Perennial and the ethos and the music are all kind of very well defined in some ways. Could you talk a little bit about like the differentiation between those things? And do you see them more as like a separation or more as like all kind of working together?
That's interesting. I would start by saying that the one thing that I'm at least really, really interested in are bands whose sound and image and worldview is so distinct that you can immediately sort of summon up a picture of them immediately, right? So that that idea of making sure that everything is really bold and tangible and stands out and is almost sort of iconic or cinematic or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and there's a million examples of those, right? But for instance, you know, it's pretty impossible to hear Like a Rolling Stone and not picture 1965 Bob Dylan in every way, right? The black sunglasses, the tightly tailored suits, the Telecaster, all of it is just immediately comes to mind. I love the idea of that, mm-hmm. of creating this this whole existence for a band where you can sort of summon up all the parts of it, whether you're seeing the band live or listening to them or reading about them. So that's, I think that everything fits together in terms of sound, image. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that, you know, when we were first starting out and we weren't matching at shows, it did have a different vibe to it. And you know, I remember our first show where we were all matching, and I was like, this feels a little bit funny to be at a show all wearing the same outfit. And it's, you know, it's something that's constantly talked about with us too. So people pointed out probably every single show, whether it's like, haha, you look sort of funny because you're matching to other people, or whether it's like, oh, that was so sick and you guys match. Mm-hmm. So I like that aspect. It does sort of, you know, it kind of reminds us of what our goals are. And it kind of coalesces our image and sound, mm-hmm. And aesthetic all together.
Sure.
Yeah, I like it a lot, definitely, and I like all of our flyer work and how the album cover looks, and yeah, we try to keep sort of a consistent image and try to use like similar fonts the whole time, things like that, where we're really sort of thinking about what we're putting into the world, mm-hmm. artistically and visually.
Yeah, and I just think, I think one thing that Chelsea and I really thought of is what, you know, think of all, we would sort of ask ourselves, think of all the details that we would put into the band we would want to see, mm-hmm. you know? So if I was at a DIY show and there was a band that all wore matching head-to-toe uniforms and I just saw them walking around throughout the night, I'd be wondering what's that band going to sound like, right? So it already creates this dynamic of there's this extra dimension added to it, mm-hmm. that hopefully just adds a bit of excitement or intrigue, or even if it's bizarre or surreal to see, you know, these three people wearing these matching outfits go insane on stage for 20 minutes. That's great. I want that reaction of sort of what did I just watch, you know? So that's a big part of it too, is a lot of our decisions are guided by what would we want to hear? What would we want to see if we were sort of designing a band, from square one?
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And it definitely makes for like an experience out of the shows, especially, and just as being a fan of your band. And like also that kind of like intrigue with like the matching outfits kind of goes back to what you were saying at the start of the interview about like the tagline, and how that kind of also conjures up like like what could this be? What will this sound like and stuff?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And we are trying to have fun with it too. So it's fun for us to really put on a show, and, you know, having the matching uniforms and having, you know, a really planned out set is important to us. It makes us stay focused, and I think it makes it more fun for us.
Yeah. Plus, you know, why should the 10,000 seat arenas get the planned out choreographed show? You know, there's something really interesting to me about the idea of putting that amount of sort of design and planning into a set that sometimes you're playing for five people. You know, hopefully that proved to be, you know, special or memorable, even if it's because it was so out of left field for the folks in the audience. That's great too.
Mm-hmm. Well, thinking about shows with five people, we like to think of when we play live, we want to approach it as if, you know, it's not the audience member's fault if a ton of people don't show up, and we should give them a good show too. You know, it's disappointing when you are excited about something and then because there's not a lot of people in the audience, the band is not actually putting on a good show.
Mm-hmm. Plus, if I'm one of the five people in an audience and the band I go to see still goes insane, like there's 50 people, that's such a good story, that's such a good memory that like the band still gave it their all, even if it wasn't whatever ideal circumstances one hopes for when it comes to, you know, there being a line out the door or some fictional scenario like that.
For sure, yeah. I mean, that's definitely like when you think of, especially like the like proto-punk bands and stuff, it's like hearing about like these legendary live shows and stuff like that kind of just builds into the whole kind of backstory of them and everything, and really something that stands out.
Right.
And I know one of the interviews that I had read, I think it was you, Chelsea, talking about kind of the way that you act during performances is like very different from the way that you act in kind of like everyday life, and how that can be surprising for like people who know you, or even just people who like go up and meet you after the set or whatever. Could you expand a little bit on that and like just kind of the idea of having that kind of separate personality?
Ah, sure. I have spent many years doing work, for my job, with children. So people usually think of me as, you know, very sweet, and kind of calm. And so the perennial version of me is a lot different. It's sort of a release for sure. I am a person who is very pro hug and, you know, and I really like to make sure people are having a good time and feeling good and safe in everything I do. So I think that's where the biggest crossover is. But yeah, perennial for people that are not interested in that type of music, and some of my, you know, my work friends, for instance, might find it to be really, really a weird version of me, to be, you know, more theatrical and aggressive in the perennial live show. But yeah, I mean, they're definitely both aspects of my life. And I find perennial to be something that is a really wonderful way to express feelings.
It's time once again for our weekly creative shout-out. Today, I'd like to shed light on the podcast Welcome to Geekdom. Host Deanna Chapman wants to talk about whatever it is her guest is passionate about. It can be a movie, TV show, comic, book, band, or anything else. And the variety is great. Hearing someone gush about something they hold dear is a treat, even if you haven't experienced that specific media yourself. I've actually been a guest on a few episodes, my favorite of which centered around geeking out about my favorite band, The Wonder Years. So scroll through the feed, see what piques your interest, and enjoy. I like to always ask kind of like the open-ended question of like, what's a recent challenge and a recent success that you guys have faced?
Recently we played 2 shows in one day.
That was a challenge, but it was a fun one.
Yeah. This is, I think we're maybe cheating a little bit.
Challenges don't have to be negative.
this feels like a humble brag, but we had an afternoon show in Boston, and you know, played the set and played it how we would, and then we had another show a good 2/3 of the way across the state in Fitchburg, and you know, played the same set length with all the bells and whistles and made sure that neither show suffered because we booked 2 in a day. But you know, we're in our 30s, and I mostly have a candy-based diet, so it's sometimes you just gotta figure out how to make it work and make sure that's you're giving it your all. So that was a bit of a challenge, but a fun one.
Yeah, it was a challenge. We definitely were tired, especially with, like, we got to the second show with so much extra time, and we were just like sitting around waiting and like just getting sleepy. But it was really fun. The success, well, that would be a success too, those 2 shows.
True, but we can't cheat that much. We have to at least come up with a different answer for that.
Let's see. Finally scheduling this podcast. That was a good success. Let's see. Well, our next EP that will be coming out probably in early December, I think that's a really great success because we are putting it out with Red Scroll Records, and we're really excited to be joining the Red Scroll family. Yeah, I think that's one of my biggest successes right now. And we had a lot of fun writing those songs and sort of taking a break from working on LP2 to put out a cassette.
Right. I think generally in the last year, I feel like we've arrived at realizing the version of the band that we had wanted it to be all along, so that the live set feels like how we want it to feel, and you know, the presentation, the uniforms, I think it seems like folks are listening more and more, and are at least entertained and interested in what we do. So all of that feels like success.
For sure. Yeah. And I totally blanked on asking about the EP, but I was curious, what was like the process of getting that together? Like it sounded like the way you were just talking, kind of that the songs kind of came together after the ones for the LP. How did that kind of come together?
Right. Well, Red Scroll reached out asking about doing a release with us, and we knew that the second full length was probably, you know, it would at least be spring 2020 before we could realistically hope that it would be out there for folks to hear. So we did want to give people sort of a sense of what Perennial sounds like in late 2019. Mm-hmm. Two of the songs are, one song is going to be on the full length, mm-hmm. as you hear it on the EP. So in some ways you could think about the EP as sort of a single off the forthcoming album.
Oh.
One song is a drastic reworking, so following in that trend we've done since day one, it's a drastic reworking of a song that will be on LP2 as well. And then two new songs where we were really playing around a bit more with trying to marry electronics and moments of real sort of soft quiet with the type of Perennial stuff that folks are more familiar with.
Mm-hmm. So in that way, is it like expanding more on the LP2 or kind of like showing what's to come?
I think some of both. So the two songs that are from the LP obviously will give some sense of what's going on, although not certainly won't, I don't think, give away the whole sort of sonic palette of that record. But the song that we're currently finishing up that's not going on the full length, I think, is really different from anything we've ever done. I mean, it almost has this quality like Broadcast or Stereo Lab or even parts of Kid A, that really sort of rounded, warm electronic feel to it, but you know, punctuated by just loud garage rock.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So that is a new development that isn't necessarily on the second full length, that turned towards sort of ambient electronic stuff. LP2 is a lot more about, I think, marrying post-hardcore with soul and jazz and pop music.
Yeah, well, I mean, both those versions of Perennial sound really rad, so definitely looking forward to hearing it. And then the last question that I like to ask everyone is just kind of, for either a piece of advice or an observation that you've had recently, either about music or life in general, just something that you'd like to share.
That's a big question.
Well, this is sort of advice, but I also think it's just a request from Perennial, which is if you're listening to this and you're thinking about starting a band, or you're thinking about writing your first novel, or you're thinking about going back to school, or you're thinking about starting a nonprofit to help those in need, let this be the moment where you decide officially that you're going to do that. Make that stuff, commit tomorrow and the day after that and the day after that to making that thing real. The world is a scary place right now, and we need everyone's help. We need everyone to make things and encourage other people to create the stuff that they've always dreamed about creating. So my advice / my very sincere plea from Perennial is to help folks who need it, and make sure that tomorrow you start doing that thing you've always wanted to do, whatever it might be, as long as it makes the world a more beautiful place.
Wow, I almost said, I was gonna say, the world needs you. So that's almost exactly what Chad said in a much shorter version. But yeah, you know, we're here. If you need somebody to listen to, we definitely, you know, want to give you hugs.
Or if you need someone to listen to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Rad, yeah. And I think I've talked about this in actually like a couple episodes, but so I might end up cutting this part, but like the way you're talking about kind of just going out and starting to create was kind of like my exact experience with this podcast. Like I was feeling really kind of like burnt out with writing, just like I would love talking to bands, but then it would take me weeks to finally get the motivation to transcribe and write it up into an article and stuff. And then I was like, I kind of just threw myself into the idea of starting a podcast, because that was the way I would be able to continue to be working with bands and talking to them and spreading their message and stuff. And it like came together like super quickly after that. And I've been feeling like super inspired by it. So I definitely love that advice, and I've followed it.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's great. And I think there's really important advice in there about really persevering and keeping at it, so that even if, you know, the first version of the thing you had planned out doesn't quite work, you know, look for the second or third or fourth version that might work better. You know, find the alternative route that will help you achieve the thing that you're going for, right? Don't give up.
And that's episode 7 of Fly on the Call. Thanks so much to Chelsea and Chad for taking the time to chat, and to Perennial as a whole for everything they do. Keep an eye out for their EP later this year, and if you're in the Northeast, there's a large chance they'll be coming your way sometime soon. The band is quite the experience live, so get out there and experience it. A special thank you, as always, to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane Palermo for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at FlyInTheCallPod. And feel free to email any questions, comments, or concerns to me at flyinthecallpod@gmail.com. We'll be back with another episode next Wednesday, and until then, keep on rocking in the free world. Fly on the call.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.